Step into modern luxury at Langham in Grandview. Your boutique, studio plus suite awaits with a premium kitchen, spa-inspired bathroom, and elevated finishes throughout. Just steps from your door, lounge poolside in a private cabana, unwind in the hydrotherapy spa, perfect your swing with virtual golf simulators, or visit the fitness center for a Peloton ride. Availability at Langham is limited. Reserve your studio plus suite today at livepreferred.com.
It says I'm live. Hello. you guys, this is so weird. This is new tech. Gen X meets new tech. You know I'm not good at this. Let me know if you can hear me because I'm trying this situation mic thing. Also, hi, and thank you for being here. I see that there's a few of you guys like checking this out. Oh, there's 46 of you. Hello, 46 people. Oh my gosh, we have so many things. Oh, great. Thank you, Bruna. She says we can hear you perfectly. Thank you so much. Okay. Before I get started, I hope I can scroll back because y'all are writing super fast and like, this is, it's going to take me a second. Before I get started, Paul and I are looking for fan fiction submissions for our Fanfic Fridays. So if you guys have anything that you think would be interesting for us to read, bear in mind that if you make it too salacious, our hearts will stop and we will drop dead because we are slightly squeamish of some of the fan fiction that's out there. Because, yo, some of the fan fiction is not for the faint of heart and impossible to read out loud. But if you have something that you think would be good for us, then you can send it to all the places or you can drop it in the chat here and our brilliant producer, Ben, will get it to us. Speaking of shout outs, we have a new intern. Her name is Alyssa. Alyssa, hi. I think I'm saying that right. It's A-L-Y-S-A-H. I think that's correct. And also, as always, producer Ben. He's the greatest. You guys know this. Also wanted to give a quick shout out to Miss Bruna again, who has been making amazing edits for us, which is super rad. And we don't have the capabilities. This is why live is hard, you guys. Capabilities to do. Okay, so let me see if I can scroll up. Oh no, I totally can't. Okay, cool. So we're just gonna answer these as best I can, and maybe somebody can tell me how to scroll up. Let's see. Stephanie says, "Yay, love Fan Fiction Fridays." Oh yeah, Bruna. I have effectively a goddaughter whose name is Bruna. Okay. Let's see. Amore asks, do you ever get overwhelmed by how many people care about you? Like, does it ever feel about too much? Does it ever feel like too much? No. The idea of people caring is not something that ever feels too much, especially because you guys are nice. It's not like, you know, the characters I play, maybe because they're moms usually, tend to attract like loving, kind fans who build community with one another and care about social justice and are lovely like you guys. It might feel different if people were like, I need a lock of your hair and I want to smell your shoes, but I don't tend to have those fans. I know some people do, and that would be that would be very different. I like you guys. I feel like I won. I feel like I won the fan lottery. Okay. If there was a movie made about you and Paul, asks Kayla, what would the title be? Oh, that's good. If you guys want to throw some answers into this chat, let me know what you think. A movie made about me and Paul. I don't know. I don't know. Paul had a story that he cut, I think, that he told about a director who saw him running and was like, you have to slow down because you're running too fast. The camera can't keep up with you. And Paul was like, fastest Jew in Hollywood. And I don't know what the movie Fastest Jew in Hollywood would be, but I think it's a really funny title. And I'm interested in what Paul would do with that. And I would play any supporting character as long as he could just... Yeah, it's like Marathon Man, but with Paul. Right. Discord has renamed itself the SWC Hype Squad. That's fantastic. That's amazing. Okay. Aki Sugiwara says, hello from Australia. Woke up earlier than usual for this. We're also discovering that I can't read today. I don't know. There's like a brain fog situation happening. Camilla says, if you could choose a few actors from Prison Break cast to create a brand new series or movie, who would you pick and what would it be about? Okay. We have to start with Amaury because he's just such a bright light. He's the first one that came to mind, but actually, I think it'd be really interesting to grab all the women, to grab Camille Guadi, to grab Cynthia K. McWilliams, to grab Holly Valance, who played Nika, Justin Gilsig, to like take all of the brilliant actresses who maybe had slightly less to do than they could have and bring us all together. Maybe it's like an Ocean's 8 kind of situation where it's a heist kind of thing. We're sort of all over. When we talked to Cynthia, she was shooting in South Africa. And Jesselyn worked a bunch in Ireland on Vikings. So maybe we make it a sort of like international female ring of thieves. Or maybe we're just a vigilante justice squad righting the wrongs of women everywhere. I kind of like that. Okay, but I'm reading these in no particular order. It's just what I can see. Bridget Martinez said, when you learned you were cast in Prison Break, did you feel nervous before stepping into that role? Were there any fears or uncertainties about what that experience would be like, and how would you push through? Yeah, I mean, I was so new. So Prison Break was 05. I finished grad school in April of 2002. So it was the third pilot I'd ever shot. We did the Tarzan pilot that went to series briefly before being canceled. And then I did a pilot called The Secret Service, which did not get picked up. And then it was straight into Prison Break. So yeah, super nervous. I still wasn't sure that my theater training would translate on camera. There's always that, like, there's always a bit of imposter syndrome. I mean, I'm going to shoot a movie. What's today? Today's July 3rd. I leave to go shoot the film the 10th, and I shoot sometime between the 10th and the 16th. And I'm still nervous. You know what I mean? I'm like, I've been almost exclusively directing for the last couple of years. What if I've forgotten how to do my job? What if this is the show where they figure out that I've been faking it all along? I think that's just a part of it. And I remembered asking, I think it was Mitch Pileggi, when I ran into him at an audition. We obviously weren't reading for the same role, but Mitch, if you guys don't know, he played Skinner in the original X-Files, phenomenal actor. We were in Tarzan together, and he was ahead of me by a couple of decades. And I asked him at the audition, I was like, you're not nervous, are you? And he goes, oh my God, I'm terrified. And I was like, you're like this big deal. You've done all this wonderful work. You're super established. And he said, I think the day you're not nervous is the day you quit. So yeah, still super nervous. But that's okay. That's how you know your heart is really beating and you're really alive. Okay. Camilo says, you're going to be great for sure. Thank you. I appreciate it. I don't believe you, but I thank you. Laura Morgan, what did you have for lunch today? I'm super proud of this. I made hummus. I realized that buying hummus takes longer than making hummus. I mean, I used a can of garbanzo beans. I didn't like make them from dry. But I had homemade hummus with a recipe I actually got from this wonderful children's book series called The Littlest Dinosaur. It's so lovely. It's this like beautifully inclusive, self-published set of children's books about a little dinosaur. And Ty is a Tyrannosaurus, and he's a vegan and he eats hummus. And my friend Bryce wrote the book. And he gave me Ty's hummus recipe, which includes cumin and paprika. and a whole bunch of tahini and a bunch of other things. So that's what I had for lunch. Also, go read The Littlest Dinosaur. It's wonderful. It'll make you happy. Kayla Topless says, we all want to know about our letters to Sarah. Oh, I can't. I'm going to start crying. I really might start crying. If I start crying, I'm going to stop talking, not crying. It meant the world. I mean, I say this a lot, and I know you guys have heard it a lot, but we put stuff out there, and you never know who's going to receive it. And there are often things I put out there that I think maybe this is too subtle, maybe this is too nuanced, maybe it's so profoundly female forward that it's going to be alienating to other people. And the smallest nuance you guys pick up. And that's, it's fucking beautiful. Okay.
Step into modern luxury at Langham in Grandview. Your boutique studio plus suite awaits with a premium kitchen, spa-inspired bathroom, and elevated finishes throughout. Just steps from your door, lounge poolside in a private cabana, unwind in the hydrotherapy spa, perfect your swing with virtual golf simulators, or visit the fitness center for a Peloton ride. Availability at Langham is limited. Reserve your studio plus suite today at livepreferred.com.
Finding great candidates to hire can be like, well, trying to find a needle in a haystack. Sure, you can post your job to some job board, but then all you can do is hope the right person comes along. Which is why you should try ZipRecruiter for free at ZipRecruiter.com/zip. ZipRecruiter doesn't depend on candidates finding you. It finds them for you. Its powerful technology identifies people with the right experience and actively invites them to apply to your job. You get qualified candidates fast. So while other companies might deliver a lot of hay, ZipRecruiter finds you what you're looking for. The needle in the haystack.
See why 4 out of 5 employers who post a job on ZipRecruiter get a quality candidate within the first day. ZipRecruiter, the smartest way to hire. And right now, you can try ZipRecruiter for free. That's right, free. At ZipRecruiter.com/zip. That's ZipRecruiter.com/zip. ZipRecruiter.com/zip.
Summer asked, did you find it hard to film the bathtub scene with Paul? Super yes. Check out those episodes because we did a couple episodes where we talk about that stuff in detail. And I don't want to go back over here because most of these folks have probably heard it, but it's... Yeah, it was super hard, but it was great because Paul was lovely to work with, and because they were exciting scenes, right? Like those were scripts that I read and was like, "Ooh, I'm going to sink my teeth all the way into this." Zoe Temelion, I apologize for what I just did to your name, Zoe. I admire you for a lot of things. Thank you. You seem so well-spoken. Thank you. Has speaking publicly been a natural talent for you, or did you practice for it? Public speaking is wild. So obviously I'm a trained actor. I was raised by professors. So speaking, being articulate was a family value. Somebody said to me the other day, all I care about is raising my kids to be kind. And I was like, oh, that's really interesting. I think my parents raised me to be articulate, creative, and an original thinker. I try to also be kind, but that was definitely not like, I don't think that was number 1, 2, 3, or 4, or 5 on our list of family values. Acting is not public speaking, obviously, because it's somebody else's character, somebody else's words. I find public speaking often terrifying. I gave a talk at the Kennedy Theater at the University of Hawaii while I was doing Walking Dead. And I like practiced it every day for 3 weeks. And I still got up there and was shaking like a leaf. The scariest public speaking I was ever asked to do, this one blew by. I still can't believe they asked me to do this. I was asked to speak at the State Department at the United States on World Refugee Day, which is June 21st, the year I did The Guardsman at the Kennedy Center, which was 2013, I want to say. I just left Walking Dead. And I was asked to address the State Department, including then Secretary of State John Kerry and the head of the UNHCR, High Commission for Refugees, about my time in northern Iraq and Jordan with refugees. I was given like 5 minutes. Like, this was not a long thing. They had lots of other people do the big talks. But I was terrified because those were real policymakers and people who do this for a living. And I sort of float in and out of this. And funny story, my husband was coming up to visit me because I'd gotten the invitation after I'd packed and gotten to DC. And I said, grab the most conservative things in my closet that I could wear. And I walked in, and compared to everyone else, I looked like a sex worker. Like, it was the longest wool gray skirt I owned at the time. And it was like 4 inches higher than every other hemline. I didn't have a blazer. So I just had like a white silk button down top that I'd been given at some press event. And I was like, this is so fancy. And I walked in and I was like, oh my God, I'm supposed to be in pearls and a blazer. It was embarrassing, and everybody was kind enough not to remark on it. Okay. I was wondering, Ingrid, do you have your season 5 scripts? I do. And you had another question about that, but it's all moving too quickly. Guys, is there a way to like go back? Ah, wait, I can scroll up. Ha ha. Sorry, guys. I'm figuring this out. Okay. Back to Bruna's question. I was wondering how you felt playing a doctor. Was it hard to learn the vocabulary/procedures for the specific scenes? Do you ever have a doctor on set to teach you? I wish we'd had a doctor on set. When we did The Good Doctor, there was a whole, I was directing that, not acting on it. There was a whole like department and rehearsals for the props. And a nurse that was there on set all the time, but I didn't do much doctoring. Do you know what I mean? Like, it was mostly an excuse to get into the infirmary and chat with Michael. And yeah, I found the language was difficult. There's one that to this day, I can't remember. Paul and I were talking about it when I rewatched it. There's one word that to this day, I don't know if I got right, because it was one of those things where the writers were like, do we talk to an expert? It's this. And then there was someone on set the day that was like, we talked to an expert. It's this. And they were all conflicting. And if it comes to me, I'll let you know. To this day, I don't think I got it right. I'm sure there are many, many, many physicians who watched that and just went, it's TV. What are you going to do? Okay. Katharina asks, how long do you think it took for Michael and Sarah to be together as a couple after season 5 ended? I mean, like a second and a half. I feel like there have been so many obstacles between the two of them. But I imagine that they weren't ever like, will you be my boyfriend? Will you be my girlfriend? Like, I can't even imagine them really married. I just think it's almost like that line at the end of 4 Weddings and a Funeral where Hugh Grant says to Andy McDowell, would you please not marry me? And do you think, I'm paraphrasing, do you think not being married to me might be something you could do for the rest of your life? Like, I think they would have a kind of like, you know, I don't want to get in your way and I don't want to slow you down. And I know that you're brilliant and independent and I don't want to be a, you know, I don't want you to feel obligated because we went through all these things together. I feel like one of them would just be constantly like, I don't want to make assumptions, blah, blah. And the other one would be like, are you done yet? Because I've kind of loved you from the beginning. And, you know, you said that thing about Baja. So let's go to Baja and grab some beer. And then that would like be it. And they'd just be together for the rest of their lives without anybody ever making a big thing of it. But it does feel like one day she'd just show up and just like out of nowhere hand him an envelope and it would have her like legal name change to Schofield or something. Do you know what I mean? Like they're sweet and charming and understated and super broken and full of trauma like that, which is why I love them. Let's see. How do you carry, Amore asks, how do you carry the weight of telling stories that come from real pain, like displacement or violence? I don't have a great answer for that. Like even the Afghan women that I was talking to in Germany when I was there a couple of weeks ago, I don't know. I mean, like some of the stories I can't tell without crying, but then that makes me think, okay, fine. It's just tears. Should I be able to tell a story like that without it affecting me and going all the way in? But then the challenge is that if you consume too much of that, does it consume you and then prevent you from doing the kind of work that needs to be done? I mean, one of the things I talk to the IRC folks, the International Rescue Committee guys, a lot about is what are we doing to take care of our staff, like especially the people who are there on site in the midst of it all, whether it's in Uganda or in the OPT or Afghanistan or wherever in the world, are we doing enough to take care of the staff? Because it's very easy, I think, in the middle of suffering to say, no, I'm going to come last because these needs are so immediate. And yet, if you don't put your mask on before helping others, as they tell us whenever we board a plane, then you're no good to anybody. And so I also think sharing those stories helps, because everywhere I go, people tell me a story and then they say, tell people, don't forget us. So I'll tell you one of the stories that one of these Afghan women shared with me. We sat down over dinner and it was a big dinner. One of the members of the German Afghan refugee population had hosted us at their house. And I sat down with this woman. She introduced me to her daughter, and her daughter was an older teenager. And I was like, there's no way this woman's my age. I was like, she's like, skincare doesn't exist, that's good. Like she looked amazing. She was gorgeous, so lovely, and very poised. And then she tells me the story of, you know, this is a story to explain to me why it's important to draw attention to what's happening in Afghanistan. She was forced to marry a man. I'd have to go back and check. I think she was 13. She might've been 12. And he was an adult and she did not want to marry him, but she was forced to marry him because she was pregnant. And there was a cultural shame around that. And if that weren't bad enough, she was pregnant because he had raped her. Trigger warning. So here was a woman who, and then she had escaped Afghanistan with her daughter. So I'm looking at her realizing this is her daughter. And she's saying, I would change nothing because I have my girl, but it's this bad. And this is why the world needs to not look away. And she's telling me the story, and I've got tears in my eyes, and she's got tears in her eyes, and her daughter's got tears in her eyes. And it cost her something to share that story, but she shared it so that I could share it with you guys. We'll get back to Prison Break now. That's a super long answer to your question. Sorry, Amari. Tim Sawyer had something to say that he got rid of. Allie, Chicago or Dallas or LA, which is your favorite filming destination? Hands down, Chicago. Hands down, Chicago. Story behind your necklace. I feel like you've had it forever. My youngest was born in the year of the golden pig. And so this was a gift from my family on my first Mother's Day. It's a golden pig. And there are teeth marks in it because when Andy Lincoln's youngest, my oldest was born in the year of the golden pig. I can't remember if I said oldest or youngest, 2007. When Andy Lincoln's youngest was a baby, I think it was season 2. Yeah. I was holding him. We were over at Andy's house for dinner and I looked down and he's teething on it and it's real gold. So it dented really easily. So I've got the teeth marks from Andy's little kid. Let's see. Katharina, when Michael and Sarah say goodbye in Crete, why does Sarah say I can't? And walks away before she returns to kiss him. What can't she do? Oh man, I'm going to have to rewatch that and find out because they cut a bunch of stuff. But I would imagine off the top of my head, she's married And I don't think at that point knows that her husband is a monster. I can't remember if she knows that Jacob is Poseidon or not at that point. But I think it probably means I can't undo my life. Also because their son is at home. And yeah, I'm going to have to rewatch that. It's a good question, Katharina. Okay, Truth Chase. I would love it if that was really your name. I don't know if that's your name or if that's a handle. Sarah Tancredi's medical skills are renowned. I bet her shoe game is even more impressive. Would you be willing to sell me some feet pics as a prescription for happiness? No. Moving on, Alejandra Schofield. Have you ever watched Legends of Tomorrow or The Flash? I haven't. I'm so sorry. There's so much I haven't watched. But I did just watch Dying for Sex, and I thought it was freaking brilliant. Michelle Williams is such an amazing actor, and Jenny Slate, and phenomenal show. Summer Kaminsky, which is your favorite season? Season one, hands down. Love season one. Taylor Lindsay, I've seen pictures of a deleted scene, season five, from Michael and Sarah, some with Mike at a park in the episode. What were those scenes? Well, one of the things that happened in that scene, we were sitting in the park, and it was like a nice family, like we're all here. We're watching the kid play. We go get ice cream. And I think it ended with Michael looking over his shoulder and realizing that there were people watching us with nefarious intent. I think it might have been a, like, we're planting a seed for future seasons. I think it was supposed to be the very last scene, and that one got cut. Favorite music genres? I am right now Raphael Jones in a Hawaiian music renaissance at home here. It's wonderful to cook, too. I grew up in Hawaii. And I've been listening to a lot of Brothers Casimero and Mauna Lua because Bobby Modero is a friend of mine, and Makaha Sons. I also went through like a four-day Creedence phase where I was just listening to nothing but Creedence Clearwater Revival because it's fantastic. And then something came up. Oh, my God, it was so terrible. Something came up on Spotify on the, like, This Is Creedence playlist. And it was like a club remix. And it was so traumatic, I turned it off, and I haven't listened to any of it since. Any recommendations, Rachel Farrar asks, for books you feel everyone should read once? I do love Sand Talk by Tyson Yacaporta. I think it's amazing. If you're more into fiction, I loved Life of Pi. I remember loving Cavalier and Clay, The Adventures of Cavalier and Clay, and City of Thieves. I just absolutely loved. All right, Helene Lafleur. Hey, Sarah, it was amazing to meet you in Paris. Will you be at the From Atlanta to Paris next year? I have no idea. That's too far away, and I don't think they've announced a list of people for that yet. Yeah. Oh, my gosh, I'm scrolling down. So much going on. Have I watched any K-dramas? Camila Naranjo? Naranjo? I don't know. Camila, if I knew where you were from, I could do this better. I have not watched any K-dramas, but I did direct a K-pop episode of The Irrational, and that was fun. Holy smokes, is that a remarkably specific world. I do enjoy a K-spa and went with several cast members of the company you keep to a K-spa shortly before we were wrapped. And I felt bad because one of the people that came with us did not know that K-spas, by and large, in the women's section, are just women being women with women's bodies and nothing covering them. And I may have traumatized the person that we brought with us, and I still feel bad about that. Am I fluent in other languages? I'm not fluent. I do speak some French. I speak very little Hawaiian. I spoke more when I was in high school. And like, enough Spanish to order off a menu. And enough Spanish actually to sort of get by in a restaurant, because when I first moved to New York City, most of our bar back staff and kitchen staff were native Spanish speakers. And so they taught me a little bit. I can say like, I need ice, please, in Spanish. Okay, Lou wants to know, how did you explain to your kids what you do for work when they first started asking? This is actually a, so, you know, my kids like to like all kids, they all went through a like make-believe phase. And at a certain point, I said, well, you know how you do make-believe? That's what mama does for a living. I do make-believe. And my kid like stopped and thought about it for a second. It was like, so you get paid for make-believe? And I was like, that's right, I do. And they stopped and looked at me and they were like, can I get paid when I do make-believe? And I was like, oh, you budding little capitalist. No. I mean, someday, maybe, but not by me. You can be paid in room and board and, you know, all the things that I love to do for you. But it was funny. They were like trying to negotiate a higher allowance, I think, based on all of that. They do think it's kind of weird. My kids have more or less not seen anything I'm in. I think they saw Colony. But they're, you know, they're understandably, I think they don't love that, like when they go to a new school or something, there's a moment where all of a sudden they may feel slightly less anonymous than they have a right to because their mom does something for a living that happens to be sort of public facing.
Step into modern luxury at Langham in Grandview. Your boutique Studio Plus suite awaits with a premium kitchen, spa-inspired bathroom, and elevated finishes throughout. Just steps from your door, lounge poolside in a private cabana, unwind in the hydrotherapy spa, perfect your swing with virtual golf simulators, or visit the fitness center for a Peloton ride. Availability at Langham is limited. Reserve your Studio Plus suite today at livepreferred.com.
Kayla wanted to know, any chance we get you to Comic-Con in Edinburgh? I love Scotland. I haven't been back for so long. Yeah, man, totally. Let's make it happen. Jess Pitzer, I've always thought it's super interesting when you talk about the time at the National Theatre Conservatory. Oh, yeah. Favorite memory from my time there. What was the application process? The application process was intense. So had to go to New York. I was in university in New Hampshire, and you had to go to New York City and audition in front of a guy named Daniel, who was the Renner, Daniel Renner, that was his name, who was the dean of the school at the time. The school was itty bitty. There were eight students per class, so 24 people in the school because it was fully funded so that if you auditioned and got in, you were given a full ride plus a stipend, which is why I went there, because that was my price point for grad school. And so you auditioned with a Shakespeare monologue and a contemporary monologue. I auditioned with a monologue of Portia's from Julius Caesar. And another one, I think it was a Wendy Wasserman play. And so I auditioned with that. I was so nervous the night before. I practiced every single day for a month beforehand. I was so nervous the night before. It was the first night in my life I didn't sleep a wink. At like 3 a.m, I called my mom from the couch at my friend's house where I was staying over. And I was like, I'm gonna bomb this so hard because I haven't slept at all. And my mom was like, just trust yourself. Trust that your rehearsing will just like lock in somehow. And it did. And then they called back, like a couple hundred people auditioned from around the country for the 8 spots. And then they do a callback weekend, actually, where they flew the 20 finalists out to Denver for a weekend. And you take classes and you rehearse and they put you through your paces and you learn monologues and scene work. And at the end of it, like a couple days later, they called the eight people who got in. Which was so nerve-wracking, so terrifyingly nerve-wracking, especially because it was Denver. So it's a mile up, so you can't catch your breath the whole time you're there. So you feel like you're drowning and terrified. Anyway, let's see. Who have I not answered here? Jamie Lee Mangan. Hey, how soon into filming season 4 did you find out Sarah's full storyline, such as the pregnancy, etc.? Did it change the way you played her? I think they told me before I came back to the show. I think they, because obviously they called me back and it was literally April 1st. of 2008, because the writer's strike had just ended. And they're like, we want you back on Prison Break. And I was like, haha, April Fools. And I hung up. And they called me back the next day. They're like, it's now April 2nd. Will you believe us when we tell you we want you to come back? And I was like, I have questions. I believe you killed me. So they gave me the kind of whole pitch for that kind of thing. So I had it going in. But I did have to figure out where acting came from again, partly because, you know, and I've talked about this before, I was kind of in the middle, although I didn't know it, of a pretty gnarly postpartum depression, but also like I'd been sharing my body with another living being for the duration of a pregnancy, and nursing still felt like I was kind of sharing. You know what I mean? I was like, my body felt like it wasn't entirely my own. And so I was sort of reticent to bring too much imagined trauma in. And there was actually a scene that we had to reshoot because I was so kind of emotionally guarded during it that when they got into the edit, they're like, we need you to like drop in more and give more. And I was like, oh shoot, sorry. So I believe they told me a fair amount of that stuff, although I don't know if I was fully aware of the Gretchen part of it all, of who was doing the torturing and stuff. That's what I remember from that. Maria Clara, the playlist you made for Sarah Tancredi years ago was so cool, full of country music somehow. Would you consider doing another one? Are there any songs that remind you of her off the top of your head? I do a playlist for almost every character I play, actually. And it's something I learned from Andy Lincoln, because he did it for the first season of Walking Dead. And then for season two, he sent me a CD called Pump Up the Grimes. And it was he's like, this is what I'm going to be working with this season. And I was like, okay, cool. I'm going to send you some stuff. And it just gave us a kind of like shared soundtrack. And I found it really helpful. And like, you know, I usually get to work an hour or a half an hour before I'm doing hair and makeup in the morning, and I do yoga. And to have a playlist that's just that, like, this is the way we move in to this character is really helpful. As for anything from Sarah, like, funny, the first thing that popped into my head is that Gotye song, Somebody That I Used to Know, as a sort of like, Leave Me Alone, Jacob anthem. That's also like, there's a jadedness to that that I don't know. That's just a song that popped into my head. Anything that really feels, I don't know. I heard some Sarah McLachlan recently. There's a sort of languid intelligence to her writing that probably feels about right. I also think there's a ferocity of maternal love and devotion to Lauryn Hill's Zion that probably would be really interesting when it comes to Mike, you know, just like that whole unsure of what the balance held. I touched my belly overwhelmed. Like, I don't know what this is going to be like, but I will be your bulwark between you and life forever. Anything, you know, like anytime you need a knight with a sword to guard the drawbridge so that you can be safe inside, I'm your Huckleberry. Do you still do jujitsu? I do. I did it last night. It was humbling. You guys, I'm really not good at it. And it's so cool to be able to do something that you can be bad at. Like, I can't be a bad actor. I can't be a bad writer. I can't be a bad director or a bad mom or a bad friend or a bad wife or a bad whatever. Like, you get to a certain part of adult life and like you have to be good at what you do in theory. I can be bad at jujitsu for my whole life. And at this point, with three stripes on a white belt, it feels like I will be. Do you know what I mean? Like, if I'm rolling with anybody who's more advanced than I am, I can't get out from under them, you know? And it's just like, I am just like, frame. I end up on my back getting smushed a lot. But it's really extraordinary to study I was never an athlete. And so it's really extraordinary to study something that involves using my body to get myself out of a situation where I'm being pinned. Like, I actually think it's really transformative for women, because a lot of the work that you do in jiu-jitsu is working from one of the most vulnerable places, positions you can be in as a woman, which is like to have someone between your legs trying to smash you, and to be able to think clearly, come up with a plan, extricate yourself, I think is really helpful. Because like, I'm terrible at jiu-jitsu, but I could probably get out of that situation. I couldn't win the fight. Like, I couldn't tap the guy, but I could probably make myself enough of a nuisance that I could get away and get safe. And that, especially as a survivor, like that, there's a level of empowerment there that's really profound. I also had to go to my coaches in the beginning and be like, hey, listen, I don't know how this is going to go. I might end up just panicking and crying, and I really don't want to do that, but it could happen. So I'm letting you know. And they're like, oh, it happens. It happens to people. Like, don't worry about it. No one's going to judge you. No one's going to be mad. So it's kind of nuts. But I love it. I love it. I love it. Okay. Oh, Zoe. Can I just call you Zoe? Zoe Temeloin. Sorry. Also started jiu-jitsu last year and bad, but I love it. Yeah, man, that's totally it. Brenda wants to know if I'm a good cook. My husband would tell you yes. The James Beard Awards would tell you no. I'm not fancy. But I cook food that my family likes to eat. Although tonight we're having like tacos and my husband made pico de gallo. Like, it's not super, super complicated. But I do currently have a recipe that I'm loving for a lemon artichoke risotto that's very like lovely, lovely, lovely. Ingrid wanted to know, do you have my season 5 script? And if so, are there any chance of releasing the script for the Michael Cera deleted scene for the show's 20th anniversary? That's a really interesting question. I'm pretty sure that I'm not allowed to do that, because there's something on all the scripts that says you don't own this and Fox will sue you into oblivion if you publish anything. But I do have my season 5 scripts. I can't find my scripts from season 2, but I did find the ones from season 5 because they're more recent. Dasani Waters wants to know, how is the kid you were pregnant with in season 2? That kid just graduated from high school and is going to university. And I have more feelings about that than I can possibly imagine, which is funny because I posted something the other day on Instagram that was like, hey, congratulations to the graduates of 2025. And like, as a side note, I was like, oh, you know, if you're a parent like me and you're having big emotions, we can do this. The number of people who reached out and were like, be strong, Sarah, it's going to be okay. We're with you. I was like, oh no. Like, it was not about centering maternal sadness at kids moving on. It was supposed to be about like a congratulations. So I apologize if I like totally effed up the messaging there. It wasn't great on my part. I apologize. Okay. What's your go-to takeout meal? Ethiopian. Ethiopian every time. Miserwat, Kitfo, Injera, Gomen. So, 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 so good. When I direct in Vancouver, there is a restaurant I go to so often that he recognizes my phone number. He'll call and he'd be like, Kitfo and Miserwat to go. And I'd be like, yeah, man, thank you. It's amazing. Alicia wants to know, why does time get faster as you get older? I have no freaking idea. But if somebody figures this out, please let me know, because I got to slow it down. I'm sure this is something that's been studied. I do find that when I can stop and be really present, time does slow back down. I had some friends visiting a couple days ago, and we took them up to see some of the summer salmon. And we ended up in this beautiful, I'll probably post a picture of this actually, now that you mention it, this beautiful like gully, like valley that had been carved by this river over, you know, hundreds of thousands of years. And there are eagles in the trees above us, and just schools of salmon swimming by. It was a beautiful day. We jumped in the river, like in a little part that wasn't full of, you know, not in a salmon part. We weren't bugging them. And we just sat there for like 2.5 hours, just mostly being and talking a little bit. And time slowed back down to the way I remembered summers as a kid. And I was like, oh, is this it? Is it just about not being in a constant panic of what needs to be done next and what am I going to make for dinner and how am I going to make a career happen? And what if I do this live thing and fuck it up? You know what I mean? Like, we can just silence those voices. Maybe we can slow time down a little bit. I don't know. Robin Finnerty wants to know, how do you feel about us now being closer to the year 2050 than 2020? Oh my God, Robin, why did you do that to me? That's terrifying. I don't know how I feel about that, but now it's a question I have to ask myself and take some time with. 2050, am I going to be alive in 2050? That's 25 years from now. Oh my gosh. I can't even imagine. I will tell you this, my fruit trees that I've planted out here are going to be massive and beautiful, and I'm going to have all of the fruit that I need to eat and that my family can consume from about June through December because the apples keep really well. So that's something to look forward to. I'm going to have lots of cherries and plums and a fig tree. So I'm going for 2050 is the year of abundant fruit. And I'm not going to think of it past that because if I do, I'll have a panic attack. Thank you. Alicia wants to know, would you ever do another show like Council of Dads? In a heartbeat. That show meant so much to me. I'm trying to create shows like that. Like, selling things is really hard right now, but I've got a couple of pitches out. I think we need that. I think we need stories that model to us the profound ways in which we can love each other like Olympic sports, the breathtaking capacity for human compassion, the ability to be messy. Actually, that's what I love about Dying for Sex, believe it or not, this sort of breathtaking ability for two people to be there for each other, even when it's hard. Yeah, I would love to do another show like that.
Step into modern luxury at Langham in Grandview. Your boutique Studio Plus suite awaits with a premium kitchen, spa-inspired bathroom, and elevated finishes throughout. Just steps from your door, lounge poolside in a private cabana, unwind in the hydrotherapy spa, perfect your swing with virtual golf simulators, or visit the fitness center for a Peloton ride. Availability at Langham is limited. Reserve your Studio Plus suite today at livepreferred.com.
With new McValue at McDonald's, you get more than you expect. So after a long day, buy a double cheeseburger and add a McChicken for a dollar. Because saving with deals is always on the menu. With new McValue.
Prices and participation may vary. Valid for item of equal or lesser value.
Let's see. I'm moving. Lou says, I'm moving into my first apartment in 1 week. Do you have any tips? Hey guys, chat. Do we have any tips for Lou? Moving into your first apartment, you probably need less stuff than you think you do. And anything, okay, for me, anything I don't unpack in the first 2 weeks, I will never unpack. So like my advice would be unpack the things, get things set the way you want them. Because we moved in this house maybe 4 years ago. I can't remember. About 4 years ago, three, 4 years ago. And there are still boxes that I haven't unpacked that are just sitting there because I'm like, well, life has moved on and I'm not unpacking right now. Like that's over. Council of Dads is such a great show. We talk about it often in the Discord group. Makes me laugh and cry at the same time. It's beautiful. Yeah, Maury, I agree. Arthur Spooner wants to know, why was the TV show Colony canceled? Because life is sad and God hates us all. That's not true. That's not right. Sorry. The head of the studio and the head of the network were both replaced in between season 3 and 4. And so we all left season 3 thinking we were coming back. And the new heads of the studio and network decided that they were going to wipe almost all existing shows, except for, I think, like Mr. Robot, because that one had been a huge like Emmy success. And they were going to start with all new shows. That one still broke my heart. I love that show so much. I've had such an amazing opportunity to be a part of some wonderful stories. Like Prison Break, obviously, Walking Dead, obviously. But I think about Colony and Council of Dads. And telling stories that meaningful is like all that little me dreamed about when I was watching the Academy Awards when I was 11 and going into the bathroom to practice my acceptance speech about like telling these great stories and stuff. So little me is happy about that. Little me is very, very happy about that. Have Paul and I watched the last episode of season two yet? Okay, so drama there. I don't know if Paul mentioned this to you guys. We did. We did the rewatch. We did the podcast. And because Paul was on location shooting in Vancouver in a hotel, his internet apparently kept going in and out, and it's not salvageable. So we are going to drop that once we can. We're both like kind of crazy busy right now, but I'm hoping that there's an opportunity for us to cross paths in the same city. So it would be really cool. We're trying, no promises, but we're trying to do a like, hey, Sarah, hey, Paul, we're both here finale for season two. So we're doing our best on that one. Ingrid, I love Katie Bowman, but she should have divorced Will. There, I said it. Oh my God, Ingrid, that's hilarious. Fair enough. I know, Alicia, Ben wants to do it live, but we don't know how. We're scared. If Ben can figure it out, we may very well do it live. But also it's going to be in some time zone that's going to totally hose one of you. And I feel terrible. You know, when it's like, oh no, these guys have to wake up at 5 a.m. or stay up until 2. So we'll see. Okay, let's keep going for a little bit. I got to make dinner by 4, but we're still chatting. Was it nerve-wracking returning for season 4? Was it as nerve-wracking returning for season 4 as it was starting season 1? And right below that, Jess wants to know, what was it like the first day back on set? My first day back on set, I want to say, that can't be right. I want to say there was an aircraft carrier involved. Not aircraft carrier. A C-130, a giant plane, but that can't be right. It's funny. Again, nerve-wracking going back to work. Having had a baby. I got super self-conscious about like, what size am I? Do I look the same way I used to look? There was a big thing season 1 where the costume designer and I had been like, she doesn't feel like a jeans person. You know, she works, right? And like doctors don't wear jeans to work, even in a prison, or at least they didn't in our imaginations back in 2005. And so I remember being costumed in like trousers, slacks, et cetera. And then one day, it felt like we should make a switch back to jeans. And I know I wore jeans a bunch in season 2, but we started season 4 in like slacks and kind of conservative sweaters. And we made this switch and I got back into jeans and I was like, oh, there she is. Like, oh, okay, I found her again. Like, it's almost like we'd gone back to kind of season 1, Sarah. And we had to land back into season 2, Sarah, in order to carry her forward into season 4. I don't remember what my first scene was. It wasn't the reunion scene. It wasn't that one. We started with something else, but I'd have to, maybe when we rewatch, there'll be some like memories that shake loose. If I can find those scripts, maybe there's even a schedule in there somewhere. Maybe there's a one-liner. I'm not sure. Stephanie E wants to know, did you receive or at least see any of the cranes from the Save the Good Doctor campaign in season 3? I didn't. They never made it to me. From what I remember, I was at home in like baby land and Wentworth called me and he was like, you have no idea what's going on right now. And I was like, I have no idea what's going on right now. Like, I don't know what's happening down the block. I'm in Canada. I was just totally overwhelmed. And he's like, the fans are flipping out. And I was like, oh, that's so sweet. He's like, no, he's like, the fans are flipping out. And I don't know how he knew. But I'd heard about all those cranes. And what was really kind of moving is for my wedding, we had tried to make 1,000 paper cranes because it was supposed to be like super good luck. And I'd read this beautiful book called Sadako and the 1,000 Paper Cranes, a kid's book when I was littler. And we didn't make it because it's a lot. you guys, 1,000 cranes is a lot. But we got to like 700 some. And I remember I'd been backstage because I got married right after grad school. We'd be backstage at a play and there'd be like 10 of us just folding origami and putting it in these like coffee cans so that they wouldn't get crushed. And that had been like a really big part of my pre-wedding thing. And at the wedding, we actually burned them as like a symbol. This is so cheesy, but like as a symbol that in a marriage, you put in an extraordinary amount of work and then you have to let it go because it's not about the work. It's about the relationship and about the devotion. And so when I heard that fans were sending in these like dozens and hundreds of cranes from around the world, it brought me right back to that in this sort of like beautiful life full circle moment. Let's see. Abby. Oh, wow. That's so sweet for your wedding. Thanks. Let's see. Oh, Abby just had her 1-year wedding anniversary. Happy anniversary. It gets better and it gets harder and then it gets better and then it gets harder and then it gets better. Aki wants to know why there are only 13 episodes in season 5. Were there 13? There might have been 10. There weren't many. Someone's going to know the answer to this. Raphael Jones says 9. Don't worry, Aki, it's fine. So there were 9 because that's what we could fit into our hiatuses. If I remember right, Wendt and Dom were still filming Legends or something in that world, but I think it was Legends. I was filming Colony, and it was between seasons 2 and 3 of Colony. And there was a window where all the cast was available. And that window was long enough to shoot 9 episodes. And I remember I had to call Carlton Cuse, who was the creator of Colony, and ask him for permission because they had me under contract, an exclusive contract, saying you can't appear in any other television. And so I called Carlton and I was like, hey, you know, there's this show that I did before I started Colony and it means a lot to me and I'd really like to do this. And I remember he was like, let me think about it. And he phoned me back a couple days later and he's like, tell you what, I'm not comfortable with you being in all of the season because then you're a series regular on 2 shows and that just doesn't feel right. He's like, but figure out how many episodes they're doing. And I was like, they said 9. He's like, how about 6? And I was like, we can totally do 6. And so I reached out to the Prison Break writers and I was like, I can be there for 2/3 of this thing. And so I think they like stuck me in the back of the car for a little while. And like writers are really great and creative about figuring that kind of thing out. But yeah, that's kind of how all that math shook out. Season 3 is 13, Joe said. Yeah. And so season 3 was 13 because of the writer's strike. So they got half of a season written and shot, and then the writer's strike came on and we had to put all that down. Alicia wants to know, do I have a favorite country I've ever visited or recommendations for travels? I have not booked for Zanzibar yet, but I've got some really good friends who are in Zambia right now. And there's so much, there's so much that I want to see over in Africa. I mean, I shot a movie in Nigeria and that's the only place I've ever been. I heard recently that there's a train that you can take, like a sleeper train, which to me feels like the Orient Express for some reason. Like I'm visualizing this like super old sleeper car. I'm sure that's not what it's like, but, and apparently you can go like north for 10 days and just sort of stop in place after place and get a feel for different countries because it's so vast. And obviously you could spend a lifetime exploring and not see it all. So I'm hoping that's in my future. I'm really curious, you know, I'm a sort of vampire, right? Like my grandfather's Transylvanian. And so I'm curious about that part of the world. I'm about to work with a director from Georgia. I'd be really interested to spend more time in Hungary, where my grandfather was from, and in the Czech Republic, where my grandmother's from. I've heard like the Moldova, that kind of area, I think would be really amazing. But then I also heard about, it's called like the Ceylon Tea Trail, I think, C-E-Y-L-O-N. And it's a It's kind of like the Appalachian Trail, except I think easier, I hope, or like the Camino Real in Spain. And it's like a long, you know, maybe 100 kilometers or something. I'm not sure. But it's a trail through the traditional tea farms in Sri Lanka. And that sounded really cool. So I was talking to a friend of mine about maybe bopping off and doing that at some point, which could be pretty rad. I helped a cat give birth to 3 kittens in Tunisia in May is the coolest comment of the day. You guys have 3 minutes to top that. Jesus, Murphy, that's wild. Jamie Lee again. I've been teaching my year 8s about gender and the patriarchy. I used your female character test as a discussion. Ooh, the Bechdel test. Yeah. Oh, in grade 8, man. Oh, there's a lot going on gender-wise there. Go you. That's fantastic. Robin's mulled over Moldova. Mulled over Moldova. That's got to be a slogan for the country. Mull over Moldova. Maybe not. They can probably do better. Also, that's not their first language. I also had to get a rabies jab. Oh, yeah. Yeah, that happens to somebody I knew, too, who ended up getting bitten by a rabid cat in Cambodia, of all places. And I had to administer the second dose. And he did not die of rabies. So, cheers. Here's to that. Katharina, how long did Sarah have her crane tattoo in season 5? Oh, that's such a good question. I don't know. I think for a really long time. Certainly longer than she's been married to Jacob or ever met him. You know, I mean, I think that was a part of her grieving process when she believed that Michael was dead. I think it was about, I want to have this where I can feel like he's always at my back somewhere. And it was interesting because I'd talked about that to the writers. I'd asked for that because I've got this big giant wedding ring that was a plot point that she needs to be able to give it to Michael and, you know, have it pay for their transport. But I hated the idea of wearing another man's wedding ring. And I was like, well, if I have a wedding ring on, then I want something that's more substantially Michael. And so I was like, what about a tattoo? And the writer was like, yeah, totally. It's great. We talked about placement and then we never saw it because, you know, nothing showed my shoulder until the day we shot that scene where you do see it, where she's sitting with Sheba, and they're talking. And we got there and they'd just forgotten to tell the makeup department that I was going to need it. And so we didn't have the sort of transfer tattoos that usually we use. And so one of our makeup artists like free drew it, just like looked on her phone and just like hand drew it with, I don't know what, and then kind of sealed it on there. But yeah, I like that one. That one meant a lot to me. Joe, it was perfect. Thank you. I agree. Okay. Like one more question here. Bruna said, you posted encounters with bears as someone living in Washington who loves nature. I'm terrified. Are you used to it? I didn't grow up here. So bears. Okay. So if it's a black bear and it's near a salmon stream and there are salmon in it, you are not the most interesting thing. I've had encounters with black bears a couple of times. Once I was in the Great Bear Rainforest and it was the end of salmon season. And this bear came around a corner and it was not 20 feet from me. And I looked at it and it looked at me and my husband was like, don't look it in the eye. And I looked down, I realized I was on a trail and I was like, oh, I'm in its way. And I moved over and it just like, doom, doom, just like pushed past me to get to the salmon stream. I would not want to run into a bear like right after they came out of hibernation because they're probably less picky about what protein source they're encountering. But yeah, I mean, if it comes to like bear and salmon, they're just totally disinterested in anything that I have to, you know, I mean, I'm not gonna like swat the fish out of their hand. I'm not gonna get in their way, but they seem very content to be left alone to eat their fish. And they're amazing to see. There's for a creature of that size and that power, they're very, like, at least the ones I've seen have been very like methodical and calm and quiet. And it's really kind of moving. I imagine it's a tiny corner of what it might feel like to see an elephant, which feels like something that I would like to do before I die. Okay, guys, I have to go make dinner. This has been really great. You guys are wonderful. Thank you for being in community with each other. Thank you for taking such good care of each other. Thank you for choosing community at a time when it seems very, very easy to choose, what's the opposite of community? Not just solitude, but like anger and judgment and derision at others. So huge, huge, huge love to you guys. And we'll just figure out the rest of what happens now with fan fiction and interviews and the finale of season two. We'll figure it out. We're going to hang in there together. Yeah. Love you guys. Thanks for being here. Talk to you later. Ciao. End. Nope, not yet.
Step into modern luxury at Langham in Grandview. Your boutique Studio Plus suite awaits with a premium kitchen, spa-inspired bathroom, and elevated finishes throughout. Just steps from your door, lounge poolside in a private cabana, unwind in the hydrotherapy spa, perfect your swing with virtual golf simulators, or visit the fitness center for a Peloton ride. Availability at Langham is limited. Reserve your Studio Plus suite today at livepreferred.com.